Welcome to Mental Illness in Pop Culture. Today we are going to be taking a look at mental health issues and professional helping as portrayed in the classic film One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. I'm Scott.
I'm Adam.
I'm Leanne.
And I'm Brock.
All right. So One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest came out in 1975. I believe it kind of swept the Academy Awards. It won 5 major categories, Best Actor, Best Actress, Best Supporting Actor, Best Director, and Best Screenplay.
I don't even think it was supporting. I think it got Actor and Actress, both lead.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's one of only 3 movies to get the top 5.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. Of all time.
The next one to get it, just for perspective, was in 1991, and it was Silence of the Lambs.
Yep.
And then before that, I think it, I don't remember the film, but it was back to like 1931 or something.
It was. It happened one night.
Wow.
Hey, that's a good film, too. Yes. The film is based on a book written by Ken Kesey. I have read the book, actually, probably 25, 30 years ago, quite some time ago. A little bit about Ken Kesey himself. He became, in addition to his books, he was also famous for getting together a group in the 60s called the Merry Pranksters. It wasn't until the late 60s that LSD was illegal, and so they used to get together and have these Kool-Aid parties filled with acid, and they would drive around in a bus and sort of do these kind of performance art things, and the driver of the bus was Neil Cassady, who is one of the characters in the book On the Road by Jack Kerouac, is based on Neil Cassady. A little trivia there, but let's get into the movie itself. A little bit more about the book. The book and the movie, I think, are both great. I don't know what you all are going to think. And they're different. Mm-hmm. And so even if you've seen the movie, you'll still get a lot out of reading the book.
Yeah. I definitely want to read the book eventually, especially when I was doing, because I have to do a little research before we, you know, jump into this. And just reading some of the differences between the book and the film, I'd imagine it has to be almost a very similar story, but of completely different perspective.
The perspective is entirely different, and mm-hmm. So let's just jump right into that.
So if you haven't seen or read, there's going to be some major spoilers here.
Yeah, every episode is all spoilers. I want to say, I love the opening. It's just this panoramic view. We see a mountain. Everything is very peaceful. And it's from looking out of the mental institution, mental mm-hmm. hospital, where most of the film takes place.
I think it's a great parallel between like nature and freedom, and then kind of what the film ends up showing as like loss of freedom and man-made just like construction.
Right. And I'm gonna want to touch on some more parallels. Mm-hmm. I think that there's was intentionality in that.
Agreed.
By the way, let me say too, now I hadn't seen this film for quite some time, and I watched it a few times to prepare for this. It still holds up. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is powerful.
Agreed.
Yeah. So, but we were going to talk a little bit about differences between the book and the film. So in the film, it is largely centered around main character Randall Patrick McMurphy, who goes by Mac, who has been, he's been arrested a series of times, most recently for statutory rape. And he's presented as a little bit of a con artist at first, and he sees that if he can bluff his way into the mental hospital, then he won't have to work on the labor farm. And he comes in, he whoops it up, he really thinks, wow, I can't believe what I've gotten away with. We see some scenes of some of the other patients in the hospital, and then we focus on a character called the Chief, who's quite a large man. The book is told from, is narrated by the chief, mm-hmm. and which is really elegantly done. And in addition to that, because we're seeing things from the chief's perspective, there's an issue with, that we don't know if this really happens or if it's just in the chief's mind, that there's an issue of a fog that comes in and out. And also time gets sped up and slows down, and it kind of adds to our seeing things from the chief's perspective. But that's in the book, so let's jump into the movie. So, movie starts out, Randall starts to meet the characters, they're playing cards, I think they were playing Pinochle, and they're not necessarily that good at it, they're not that focused. We get introduced to Nurse Ratched, who is just this archetype of just this rigid, kind of passive-aggressive throughout the film. Really, really uptight. I think in the dictionary, you look up anal retentive, you see her picture right there.
Agreed.
Yeah.
And I think she actually came from a military background.
I respected that character in the beginning, before okay. you really realize what's going on. I actually found her crazy calm. And, you know, I even thought, if I was in that position and dealing with some of the symptoms, for lack of a better term, that she's looking at, and 18 of these gentlemen are in this particular unit that she's managing, I thought she was so calm. I thought it was amazing. So when you say passive aggressive, I think at the beginning of this, we see it as very passive, but in control.
Yeah.
And then we find the aggressive start to roll out.
Yeah. I agree with that. And in a setting like that, there's a need for structure. And she certainly is very focused on structure.
Right. And I did some research as well, and it did state that she was a military nurse prior to into the ward. So,
and I think, like, you know, at first she does seem kind of calm and stable, and you don't dislike her in any kind of way. I think it is interesting, though, that when she comes into the picture the first time you see her, she's behind a gate or a fence.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, I thought there was a little bit of, like, symbolism or, like, foreshadowing about how that was going to come through with her personality and whatnot. But I think from the first meeting where Mac is there and kind of, you know, there's the question. I'm trying to remember the guy's name, too, that they were focused in on. Is it Harding? Harding is the character.
He's got a mustache. Yes. He's thin. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. And, like, you could see at the end, because they kind of had, like, a disagreement, and there was some yelling and a little chaos during that meeting, and she's sitting there almost with a smirk, like she's enjoying part of this, and you start to realize there's something here that we haven't seen yet, and it seems a little evil.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well said.
So, as McMurphy, as he's getting to start to know the other patients on the ward, I think the first time that we really get an idea of Nurse Ratched's rigidity might be during a group counseling session, mm-hmm. and it's October, it's the time of the year for the World Series. Mac wants to watch the World Series, and so she says, well, we'll take a vote. I think that happens twice.
Yes, it does.
And the second time, Mac is all happy because 100% of the people sitting in the group, 9 of them, they vote yes. And she says, well, but what about these other 9? It's a tie vote, and therefore you lose. And these are all, the other 9 are just out of touch. They're somewhat catatonic.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we're starting to see her need for an imposition of control and rules.
Absolutely.
Then I was wondering if we could talk a little bit about how the character of Mac, how it develops throughout the film.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, just even at first, I mean, we worked last semester with another film where there was a talk of, like, statutory rape or molestation charges, and how you know, working in this field, we have to be comfortable working with clients and helping people through things like that. So I was trying to keep that in mind when watching this, because I remember watching it years and years and years ago and initially having a really negative reaction toward him.
Yeah.
And even when bad things were happening to him in the film, like before I got into like mental health, I saw this in high school thinking like, well, I actually don't feel all that bad for him. Like, he did a bad thing. And watching it now as a mental health professional, like, or at least on my way to a professional, I had a completely different reaction.
I have to agree. At the beginning, when he was sitting in, I believe it was they considered the warden's office of the mental health facility, and he was going on and on about the statutory rape and making comments, it kind of made me uncomfortable. But it almost was kind of like, you know, like you said, like I don't feel sorry for him, you know, and maybe they should put him back in the other boot camp situation. I think he was using this more as an easier situation for himself. So it was just kind of hard for me to kind of sit through that and listen to him talk about that as well.
There's definitely, since I did some of this work in my professional mm-hmm. background, there was definitely rationalizing going on mm-hmm. and definitely downplaying and sort of blaming the victim mm-hmm. in this case, which was a 15-year-old girl. Absolutely. Now, and so, but I want to say the character when Mac comes in, and by the way, I was thinking, well, probably he's going to, even though he's bluffing it, probably he's going to have some sociopathic tendencies or maybe antisocial personality disorder. Yeah. I ended up not thinking that. And in fact, I think that he changes quite a bit as the film progresses. Mm-hmm. Almost, you know, what in literary terms sometimes gets called a Christ figure, mm-hmm. because there ends up being quite a bit of sacrifice and empathy and compassion that yeah. comes out.
And I mean, just even in the film itself, there's also little scenes and elements that do kind of have a symbolism to religious figures. Like when they're going to get their medicine for the first time and the one guy just sticks out his tongue and
that's
they put
right.
it on his tongue, like
yes.
it's almost like... Like communion, body of Christ, you know? And then like Mac doesn't take it, which is almost like him going against like a religious
yes.
aspect.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there was more religion kind of tied into this than when I first yeah. saw it.
Hey, I have a little quote that I found in my research. I mean, it's just a couple of sentences, but it goes along those lines. I'll share it really quick. So Mac increasingly becomes identified with Christ from the crucifixion on the electroshock therapy table, preceded by the patient, quote, washing his hands of the whole affair, unquote, to the echoes of the Last Supper when Billy Bibbit engages in sexual relations with Candy Star. Like Christ, Mac sacrifices himself for the benefit of the group, and in doing so, he loses his free will. Chief makes it clear that Mac is not acting on his own when he brutally attacks Ratchet, but in according with the will of the other patients. So that's well said, according to what you guys just mentioned.
Wow.
I love that, because I knew there were other elements, and I really wanted to come back and look at it from that perspective.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, there's only so much time in a week.
Yes. Okay, I want to touch on, I'm going to want to come back to all of this, mm-hmm. but I don't want to jump right to the end of the film yet. So the character, I'll tell you, the character that I just thought was phenomenal was the chief.
Okay.
And the actor who played Billy Bibbit, he won an Academy Award. I wished it had been the chief. I thought that was so well played, such an important role. And what do you make of his choosing to present himself as deaf and mute,
mm-hmm.
and then revealing himself to Mac?
Well, you know what? I kind of see it kind of from a multicultural perspective, because he, within the patient setting, was the only minority.
Yes.
And so I think he... no one really addressed him or talked to him. And then as soon as Mac came into the situation, Mac engaged him immediately. Even when they went out to play basketball, you know, and that's like one of my favorite scenes.
Yeah.
The chief was running back and forth, you know, knocking the ball, you know, back out of the basket for the, you know, the guards team and slam dunking and shooting, you know. But I see Mac engaging him right away, where I got the sense that Cheap was not engaged with anybody else like that ever mm-hmm. before. So I thought it was pretty interesting to yeah. see it from my standpoint.
And I think the really interesting thing is, you know, he's Native American. And so this kind of idea that, like, he's been silenced, he's choosing to stay silent, like, going beyond the idea of just losing your freedom because you're in this mental institution or mental hospital, but he as a person and as his culture have been silenced and lost their freedom years and years and years ago through people stealing their property and genocide.
Right. Wow, and so as I look at my bookshelf, I see Man's Search for Meaning up there by Viktor Frankl, and it reminds me also of what Frankl, when he was in a concentration camp, and despite how he was treated, he was able to internally maintain his self-respect and dignity, which is similar to, I think, what you're saying about
Absolutely.
The Chief. And Leanne, I know that you had some thoughts about the Chief, too.
I do. It was my favorite character. I was both excited and sort of amused and amazed that in one of the very first, you know, flashes in this film, we see this gigantic Native American man. I also think it's interesting that his name is Chief. You know, he's in fact not one.
Right.
And so I did. So that has its own, you know, just questions and I don't know, maybe, well, I'll get to that in a second. But I did a lot of research because what I walked away from the movie thinking that I really needed to understand more about, although obviously all of these characters have such a backstory as to how they got where they are, and that's really not shown to us in the movie. But I really wanted to do some research, and I was hoping that the book would give some background on this gentleman called the Chief. And so, you know, not to really go through all the book stuff, because as we said, it's very different. What was interesting is that, I'm sorry, I started to get some feedback. I'm sorry for the pause. In that character's background, his mother is actually white, and his father was the chief of his tribe. And his mother, I haven't read the book, maybe Scott can speak to it, and maybe it doesn't even matter, but his mom ultimately takes tribal lands and sells them. She also gives him her European-American last name and removes the tribal connotation, and I don't know what happens to his father. But basically, he is pulled out of a collectivist culture that he has grown up in because his mother is after money and is basically selling off tribal lands. So that's literally the background of this person. So when we talk generically about Native Americans, you know, having that naturally instilled skepticism regarding the United States, you know, what that is as a glimpse overall to that culture was really happening within the Chief's family. So talk about being silent.
Yes.
Like your father is removed, your mother has taken your voice, your tribe's voice, and your dad's voice. So there's just a couple more layers in there. And I think that there's some examples of institutional racism. What are they called? The orderlies.
Yes.
Make interesting references to his multiculturalism, his name being Chief. And even when Mac meets him, Mac does this thing.
And he raises his hand and goes, how?
Yep.
Yeah. So... There's layers of it, but I really loved that character. I love that it was included in the way that it was. The Native American was the narrator for this, and that it's coming from his perspective, and I think there's a lot more. We could probably spend 8 hours analyzing the Chief, honestly.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Boy, that's going to really come to play in the end, which, again, I don't want to get there yet.
Which is a huge difference from
yes,
the book.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I think that you said that I really want to jump in on just a little bit, if we can, is that, you know, watching it today, it still holds up.
Yeah.
And, you know, that, especially since there's such a difference between mental health back then and mental health now, and yet somehow it still holds up incredibly. I think part of the reason is because there's all these, like, subtle, you know, maybe it's not just about mental health, or maybe it's not just about these characters. Like, there's bigger aspects to it. And also because, I mean, it's considered one of the greatest films of all time. Yes. Like, I mean, almost every list that lists like 50 or 100 films has this film in there. Surprisingly enough, the writer of the movie hates it and refuses to watch it.
Which,
or the writer of the book.
So, side note, there are so many coincidental parallels to Girl Interrupted,
which Agreed.
We did, including the author of the book distancing themselves from the film, mm-hmm. despite the film winning numerous awards Absolutely. And being thought of as a great film.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it took so much time to even make this film. It was originally supposed to be made when the book first came out. Douglas, the older Douglas, what is his name?
Kirk Douglas.
Kirk Douglas had the rights to the film, but it took over a decade for it to be made, so he was too old to play the character.
Yeah.
I mean, several studios passed up on it. Several actors, actresses all passed up on it. Yet it's one of the greatest movies, pictures of all time. And I thought one of the most interesting things is just what this movie brought to the forefront of people's minds when it came to mental health. It challenged the way that we look at like psychiatric hospitals. It challenged the way that we looked at electrotherapy, which really was used quite a bit.
Yes.
Challenged the way that we looked at patients' or clients' rights. I mean, it literally changed the way that we saw mental health because the public now was concerned for it as well.
Well, okay, so in within my professional background, when I was working as a community support counselor, part of what I did was be a liaison to the local mental hospital, which was in a rural setting. This was in the mid-1990s, so like 20-something years ago and 20-something years after the film. It wasn't that different. And it wasn't archaic. It was more modern. But in terms of when I would attend the staff meetings, the way that patients were talked about was almost subhuman, like almost like chattel or, you know, to be rounded up or pieces of meat. And it really bothered me. Mm-hmm. And some of this may have been the very rural setting. So they weren't obviously able to attract or pay the psychiatric staff that well, and so they took who they could. But watching this movie brought me some flashbacks from that
time. Sure.
Yeah. Well, I think even at the beginning, I mean, I don't think the movie had one sunny day. Everything's gloomy, cloudy, overcast. You know, I don't know if that was purposeful or just how the filming took place, or they could have been in Seattle. I don't know where they were. But it just seemed so gloomy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Every day. And I was like, is this kind of portraying what mental health is gloomy as well, you know? So found that very interesting.
Okay, I have a new topic that I want to touch on because, Leanne, you were talking about the chief's parents and his mother taking away his tribal heritage and selling off the land. So I want to use that as a segue that I thought the issue of gender played a subtle role, but that was prevalent throughout the film. And so I think that some of my thoughts are Nurse Ratched takes on somewhat of masculine characteristics and property in terms of her self-presentation. I think that Mac becomes more and more nurturing as the film progresses. And, you know, we started with seeing the somewhat of a chaotic scene of the men in the hospital ward. And at the very end, they're playing the card games that Mac taught them. They seem to have much more of a masculine identity. Mm-hmm. I think they got their balls.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you can see that she's more delicate at the end too, even if it's just through like, you know, I don't want to like foreshadow anything too much, but like the neck brace and everything. Yeah. And she even like smiles toward the end. Hmm.
And her voice is lower too.
Absolutely.
Right. Or lighter.
Right.
Lighter for sure. And there was something that I read too, and it's kind of a parallel probably a little bit more to the book, but she was described in the book as like other than the fact that she had like large breasts and she wore a feminist pin and... in the book, which they said was like completely opposite of like what you picture this woman to actually care about.
Yeah. Interesting. So something else that I had read about, in terms of the professional helping, obviously there's Nurse Ratched, mm-hmm. but it seems like McMurphy is the informal real helper. Mm-hmm. And I read an analysis where the author said that Nurse Ratched, it was 1975, and there was sort of a dispute, conflict between two schools of counseling, behaviorism and humanism, and that Nurse Ratched represented behaviorism and Mack represented humanism, which would be person-centered counseling, gestalt counseling, existential counseling, etc.
Yeah, and one of the things that I read too was that it showed a very medical model way of dealing with mental health, mm-hmm. whereas counseling now, we're very much a wellness model.
Yes.
You know, to...
Very strength-based.
Absolutely. And we would never give someone a medication and be like, we're not going to tell you what that is. Like, the medical model in this film, it kind of showed a lot of flaws with it.
Yeah.
I mean, to the point of lobotomy.
Lobotomy.
So it's kind of funny that we're talking about her in that way, because it's true. But then there's also this, maternal matriarchal thing going on with her too. Like, you get punished.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell on you, or I don't know, telling, I think Brock called him the warden, but telling the other doctors in the room, you know, I think we can help him and I'll take care of him. And so it's, again, I think it's that passive aggressive thing. It's kind of both.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, that remarkable quick happening with Billy Bibbit, yeah. where a lot happens in a short amount of time.
Yes.
And so there's Mac arranges this big party on the floor. It's supposed to be the time where he and the chief, they're going to leave for good. Their escape is planned, but Billy is pining for one of the prostitutes, Candy. And so Mac stays there so that Billy can lose his virginity to Candy. Unfortunately, they all end up passing out and are then discovered. When Billy comes out, having had sex, all of a sudden it's like he's cured. And even when Mac had invited him to escape with the chief and him, Billy said, I'm not ready yet, in that stuttering voice of his. Yet when he comes out, this is somewhat confronts Nurse Ratched, and he speaks in a clear tone until Nurse Ratched says, I'm going to have to tell your mom. Mm-hmm. And that leads to a return of the anxiety and the stuttering, and I think that's when he gets sent to the warden's office, and while he's in there, he slits his throat and kills himself.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting. I liked hearing you, Leanne, talk about a little bit about Nurse Ratched as well, because you're seeing her from a different point than I think I did. Mm-hmm. Typically, when we're doing this, I noticed, when we watched Ordinary People, I loved Mary Tyler Moore and everyone else hated her. And it happened a couple other times where I just loved, the strong woman. And somehow in this one, I just did not like her. And even when I tried to, I almost couldn't find any redeeming qualities. I don't know why. I just had such a negative reaction to her.
Yeah. Well, I know why. She was very confrontational. I mean, she would not let... when they were in their group counseling and when someone didn't want to talk, she made them stick to the topic. No, we're still finishing with you. You have to answer this. Why did... You know? So she was very rigid. Yeah. Very... I almost thought she was robotic. She reminded me of the Terminator. It was just... very non-emotional, very monotone, very robotic, uncaring type of individual.
And maybe it's because she was a mental health professional that I held it against her a little bit harder. It wasn't the mom of someone or whatnot. It was someone who was supposed to be representing our field.
Yeah. I mean, just for me personally, I know people who have that type of personality in real life. And it's a huge hot button for me. It's really, I have a hard time with that rigidity. And but I So the scene where they're all passed out and mm-hmm. she comes back in, the place is a wreck, and she's just livid. I liked that.
I
felt like it was a little punishment for her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, you know, so they Scott went on to kind the Joker.
Go ahead. Scott, kind of back to something that you mentioned earlier, talking about how, you know, Mac was kind of the positivity. He was the...
Yeah.
I don't know how you worded it, but that was the good stuff. I mean, we see in almost every character, Harding, Cheswick, Billy, Martini, there is a strength, and we haven't really gotten to their outing, but there is such strength that comes from them. Like some of the interactions between just the, you know, the patients and Mac, you kind of forget in some of the conversations or for moments that there's mental illness among the group. I mean, they sort of figure out how to work together, communicate together. I mean, Mac is really illuminating these people as who they are. I mean, talk about meeting somebody where they are. Although there are really funny lines, like I think Mac or one of them says at the beginning, get a grip on yourself. You know, yeah. I mean, so there's some kind of joking and that sort of thing. But I'd really like to talk about how much empowerment.
Yes.
Mac's kind of fun, or I mean, it is like fun, rebellious freedom that kind of comes out of it. But I would like to talk through that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I think empowerment is the perfect word for his leadership, Mac's leadership and facilitation style. Additionally, I teach group counseling frequently, and we talk about what are called therapeutic factors. And several of them are displayed here. One, cohesion gets built. Starting with Mac's interaction with the chief, there's installation of hope, which I believe continues to build and really plays out in the final, in the ending with the escape, which we'll talk about in a bit. Tremendous amount of altruism. Like, again, Mac, he could have left. He wanted Billy to have this sexual experience. And then Nurse Ratched comes in. It's the next morning, but Mac has the keys to get out of the window. And then he hears the nurse scream because she's discovered that Billy has killed himself. Mac could have left. Instead, he runs to attend to Billy, which is going to be what results in his being lobotomized mm-hmm. and escaping through death.
Yeah. And I think one of the huge themes of this film is just like freedom versus oppression. You know, you do start to forget sometimes that you are dealing with people who probably have pretty severe mental illness or you know, I mean, you do start to forget, though, because they are having these characters reveal a lot more of themselves. So when you start to think about it, like, yeah, someone who's in a hospital, as I don't think we have hospitals like this so much anymore, but order is necessary because we can see kind of what happens when they kind of get out of line or get out of order. Yet here we are as the audience rooting for that almost. So I there was a line that I saw, it was either in like a video about this film or something, but it said, there's no freedom without some kind of chaos, but in order to maintain order, there must be oppression. So it's like you're constantly battling between the two. Like, we do need order. Even in society, there has to be order. But then to what point where we're starting to lose our own freedoms due to oppression? And like, it was just this thing that I kept circling with. Like, I feel it's happening again today in our political aspects.
Mm. So it's like these two dialectical forces mm-hmm. that are...
Well, it's the approach of, I mean, I think in the simplest form, it's the approach of Nurse Ratched that makes us all just really want them to get super unorderly.
Yeah.
I mean, we know that we need order for any kind of group to succeed or society, as you said, of course. But I think that, you know, she's such a villain.
Exactly.
And we just know how oppressed they are. And so even though you can understand that, I think that part of what I was rooting for was for them to just rebel against her.
Yeah, we want order. We want order until it gets to the point of like stringency and loss of freedom and loss of rights. Nurse Ratched is like our modern Trump.
What?
I was wondering how many minutes it would take for
that.
That
was Adam.
I accept that fully.
So considering that strength thing, one of the things I wanted to mention about Billy is, you know, Scott mentioned the whole, he comes out not stuttering, and, you know, he's pretty clear. And then she starts talking about the mom and kind of instilling that fear or reminding him of who he really is, which is based in that fear. And so, you know, he is taken away, not voluntarily, and commits suicide in that office. One of the things that I read is, you know, he has tried to commit suicide before and failed. So is the strength that he has enabling him to succeed at that?
I think that's a really good point.
So, I mean, even he transcends who he was,
right,
even though we're talking about something terribly negative.
And if we go back, to the last thing that he says to Mac, before losing his virginity, he says, "I'm not ready yet." And then he has this experience with Candy, and he becomes empowered, and now he's ready. And maybe from a literary perspective, that's the only thing that could have happened. Mm-hmm. Because he has tasted freedom, and now he's returned to this oppression, and that's no longer acceptable to him.
Mm-hmm. I think that there's a second reason for his behavior in that office, for the, you know, final attempt to take his life. When Nurse Ratched is going over that and reinstilling that fear, reminding him of who exactly he is, he tattletales on Mac.
Oh, he does. You're right.
And I think that this goes back to that kind of Christ.
Yes.
Metaphor for what we're talking about.
Absolutely.
There may be a part of that suicide, I mean, it's not an attempt anymore, of him killing himself, that is sort of a penance for betraying Mac.
I completely agree.
That was brilliant.
Wow.
Okay, I did read a little bit of that, but I want to sound smart. So
bowing out to the Church of Leanne.
I fell through with it.
Yeah, never admit that you read that. Just own it and take it.
I got to share. I can share parts of it, though, but I think it's true. I mean, I think there were two things. So one was that he was empowered, but then there was a different kind of oppression, and it was within himself. I mean, he felt terrible. He kind of denied the Christ.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, and so I prior to this conversation, I had not picked up on that freedom within oppression theme, but now I see it as rampant throughout the film. Going back to what we talked about, Chief being able to preserve his self-respect and dignity, like Viktor Frankl in Man's Search for Meaning, and each of the characters being able to do that. So even though they couldn't watch the World Series, so Mac, he created a World Series as the announcer, and they were all empowered and into it. And then same with that fishing outing, that he's creating this freedom for them within that. And then going to the final scene of the guys playing cards, and they're playing blackjack now, and they're using the terms that Mac taught them, that they have found a way to find themselves and have freedom within this oppressive setting.
And I think, you know, one of the things we haven't discussed yet is the fishing scene.
Yes,
it's
let's
a
talk
huge
about that.
Difference between the rest of the film. And at one point I even read, I can't remember if it was the director, but someone wanted to completely omit that scene from the film because it was supposed to be about this, like, you know, in this mental institution, and it kind of broke free of that and showed, I don't know if it was like a foreshadowing or what the intention was, but I'm not gonna lie, when I was watching it, it was not that I didn't like that scene, or I'm not sure I'd omit it myself, but it doesn't quite fit, and I felt complete, like, when watching it, I lost interest a little bit during that part, and I just wanted to get everyone else's kind of point of view on it, or what you guys thought of it.
You know, I see where you're coming from your perspective. I also see people who are scared to be out on their own, and I, you know, that was a perfect time for them to escape, even Mac, right? But they came back to the shore where everybody was waiting for them. So I think it showed maybe some complacency where they were. They were too scared to go out on their own. But it kind of fit in because they were so, it was so regimented what they were doing before that they knew they had to get back to their situation. Because mm-hmm. Maybe they didn't feel like they could survive in society without that rigidness.
Okay.
You know, I think, you know, that's kind of how I saw it. But I know exactly what you're talking mm-hmm. about.
I was not particularly entertained by that scene, except for that I really loved Mac introducing them all as Dr.
Oh, yeah.
So-and-so and whatever, and their face expressions and response.
Except and for I the one, right? Except for the Harding guy?
Yeah.
He's saying, this is Harding and this is Doc.
Yeah,
he purposely did that.
That was hilarious. And that was amazing itself. But I think even just that example I just used was another layer of that empowering thing. And other than, you know, the moments of Cheswick, you know, releasing the bow, or them running, that's not the right word, I'm not a sailor, so whatever it's called, the wheel, and them all running over to see Mac and Candy in the room, but the rest of it, you know, when they catch the fish and they come back around the corner and they're holding it up, I really just think that the story just illuminates the empowerment.
Yes.
It's really about them most of the time, except for those little pieces. They're super normal on that boat.
Yeah.
Forgive the use of the word, but they don't seem ill. They seem very excited to go on an outing together. And so I think that's why it's included. I'm glad it's included.
It's like Mac is teaching them about how life can be.
Mm-hmm.
And with
mm-hmm.
fun and energy. Again, hope and excitement.
It's endearing to watch them experience it.
Yes. Couple side thoughts about the outing. I mentioned earlier there are lots of sort of parallel occurrences throughout the film. I'll try to think of a few of them. There's a cliche, though, that if you see a gun in Act 1, have you guys heard this? If you see a gun in Act 1, it better get fired in Act 3.
Huh.
So I think starting with the opening scene is that panorama of the mountain. That is also the closing scene as the chief runs toward freedom
mm-hmm.
in that exact scene. There's a little shot in the warden's office when Mac meets the warden. Is he the warden or is he like a chief psychiatrist?
I thought he was like a chief psychiatrist.
He is that.
Yeah.
But the picture of him holding up the Chinook.
Yep.
And that foreshadows this fishing outing. There's the playing cards at the beginning, playing cards at the end. There's the returning from the electroshock therapy as if he's out of it. And then he winks at the chief. And then we see him do the same shuffle. But he's not
later,
faking it
because
he's been lobotomized.
Yeah, and I don't remember if it was a deleted scene or whether it actually showed up in the film, because you know how sometimes you get DVDs later on after, like the DVD I have is a special release, so I think it had deleted scenes included.
That's cool.
But one of the other characters had a lobotomy as well, and it showed the scars of the character's lobotomy. So it even foreshadowed like this character
right.
with the lobotomy, with Mac ending up having
right.
a lobotomy. Which, I mean, could also just, like, beg the question, like, is this all really happening, or is it in the mind of someone? You see a picture of someone with a fish, and now I'm having this, like, illusion that I'm...
Oh, yeah.
I'm going
interesting.
Fishing.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Hmm.
Now, you know, you wonder, did people... I mean, these lobotomies, did this actually happen? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And just to bring back the political nature, In the Kennedy family, I believe in the 1960s or 50s, I think it might have been Rosemary. There was a daughter that was a sibling to John and Bobby Kennedy. And she was kind of a wild, you know, she liked to party. So she was 19 years old. And the mom, I don't remember her name, Rose. So mom went away for the weekend and Dad Kennedy took her in to have a lobotomy. Mm-hmm. And for the rest of her life, she had the mental capacity of a 3 to 5 year old child.
Yeah, she was hospitalized for the rest of her life as well.
Yeah. I don't, do, are lobotomies still done? Do you know?
I don't believe so.
Yeah.
A little bit of research I did on it said it was pretty prevalent in the 40s and 50s. And then there was too much emerging, basically, medication for depression and those kind of things that came out, and it flipped to that, thank God. I mean, that's a pretty extreme difference. But in the research I did on it, and even the story you just tell, it is such a sad, it kind of hurts my soul to think that that was in practice at all. And there were a lot of people, I think there were like 200,000 people in the United States in those years that had that done. 5% died, so it was kind of justified in use. And they would say that the behavior of these people, though a partying 19-year-old, I can't imagine, but the behavior, you know, before it, putting them into that remedial childlike stage was so much better to these families than the behavior that they had that they didn't like before, that it was justified. It's just such a sad perspective to read.
Absolutely. And I think the same with the electroshock, because that was used before they would prescribe anything because it worked faster and they thought it worked longer. Mm-hmm. And then after doing it so many times to the same people over and over, they realized there was long-lasting effects from these electroshock treatments. So, I mean, it's really showing this old medical model and just some of the terrible things that were done in the name of mental health back then.
And another Kennedy relative who ran for vice president, Sergeant Shriver, he was shamed by his opponents because he had received electroshock therapy.
Hmm. Hmm. I saw you wrote something down. I was curious what you were at one point. I was curious if you had something.
Oh, we've already talked about it.
Oh, okay.
But that was just this emerging theme of the freedom that they were able to find within the oppression.
I don't know if we're here yet or not, but there is also the difference between what happens with the chief in the movie and what happens with the chief in the book.
You know, and it's been so long since I read the book, and unlike other podcasters, I didn't do as much research. So why don't you talk about that?
In the movie, you know, he is fleeing and runs away, and he's like free.
And by the way, that's another one of those parallels. So Mac tries to pull up that hydro station, and he can't do it. But then at the end, the chief goes, pulls it up, breaks the window, and he's free.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if water equals freedom.
Well, funny enough you mention it, in the book, he drowns in a pool.
Oh.
Which is water, I mean, freedom. Yeah. He also, you know, Billy is killed, Mac is killed, and then the chief is killed. It shows, like, I guess the only way in the book they saw it as being free was through death.
Right, right.
I was going to mention in regarding the chief, and I didn't know that part. I really need to read this book. Thank you for sharing that. You know, Native American culture is based on the elements, right? I mean, it's water, it's fire, it's earth. And so when we have that entrance of the land or the hills and the trees and the whatever, and it's very calm, but then specifically, and we mentioned it, but the chief breaking that window and then running off into this nature, and then you say he's ultimately killed in water. I can't miss that tie-in, that how these elements are so important to the Native American culture and so prevalent in this movie surrounding the chief.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, there's even like the scene where they're showing like a squirrel running along the top of the fence, kind of showing this like freedom is almost like nature and man-made mankind is this oppression. And kind of the parallel between the two.
Yeah. Well, and I there's a little nature involved that in the title of the film, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Cuckoo, I mean, that's a slang term for mental illness. Mm-hmm. And so Cuckoo's Nest, obviously, the mental hospital that they're in. And I know that it comes from a poem, so I'm going to read the poem that comes from. It's a little distant for me. Tingle, tingly, tangly toes. She's a good fisherman. Catches hens, puts in a pens. We're Blyer, Limber, Lock, three geese in a flock. One flew east, one flew west, one flew over the cuckoo's nest. O-U-T spells out. Goose swoops down and plucks you out. And that's the poem where the title came from.
I never even knew it was a poem.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, and there's a little, it explains it on the webpage that I'm on. It says, the cuckoo's nest is the hospital. The good fisherman is Nurse Ratched. She fishes in the patients and catches hens, puts them in pens. And this relates to Mac calling the group counseling sessions pecking meetings. Mac is the goose that flies over the cuckoo's nest. And in the beginning of the book and movie, he calls himself the bull goose, or the bull goose loony. And the chief is the one that is plucked out of the cuckoo's nest by the goose, who is Mac. And then it just concludes, other connections to cuckoo birds are made throughout, such as a cuckoo clock, tying them in with the oppression of the patients. So this oppression does seem to really be a big thing. Oppression and freedom. And freedom within yourself. And so now I want to talk about just about at the end. So they've taken Mac away, and somebody is saying that he saw that Mac has escaped and he got out through the tunnel. And Harding, who's kind of a Debbie Downer, and he says, no, I heard he's just upstairs. And then, but the patients, as they talk amongst themselves, they really need to believe that he's escaped. That's really crucial for them. And then the chief does escape, but they say they've escaped. And so the fact that this escape and this freedom has been found through various means, that really provides hope for them and really brings them together. And I see that as like the peak of the whole thing.
Absolutely. And, you know, I do want to clarify, I was just looking through my notes again, and I misspoke. It wasn't the chief that drowned in the book. It was a different character.
Okay.
So I want to make sure that that's
okay.
Put in there. So, I mean, the whole, idea of escape and whatnot is still there.
Well, I'm definitely needing to reread this book.
I know. I really want to read the book, especially
Me
after
too.
Doing this discussion. So is there any other major themes, things that need to be discussed, things that we've missed? I mean, I'm sure there's 100 things we possibly
missed. I just want
to
reiterate the change process and the that the group who remain in the hospital, they become empowered. The chief, Mac, and Billy have all found escape in their own way. Mm-hmm. And Nurse Ratched, it seems like she's changed somewhat as well.
One would hope.
It's oppression, it's empowerment, and then escape. That is the theme. That is the story of the story.
Yeah,
absolutely. And I love that it is held up. And it's kind of funny because last semester, our logo on some of the things was a picture from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
That still is our...
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, and we've never spoke about it.
We
yet.
Never have.
So,
and I chose that because this film is just so iconic of what our podcast series is about.
Absolutely.
I mean, this is the one that set the tone. And boy, it's and so well acted. Mm-hmm. This is, mm-hmm. I mean, this was fairly groundbreaking for Jack Nicholson. He was already established, but this is quintessential Jack.
Yep.
I mean, even a little foreshadowing maybe of The Shining, mm-hmm. where unfortunately we get into the psycho killer.
Yeah.
Component there.
I can't watch that one.
It's worth watching.
He does it so well.
He is just, I mean, Jack is insane. He's such an incredible actor, but on top of it, he's a little kooky himself. Yeah.
Oh, yes. The real life Jack Nicholson. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and then he would also go on to play someone with a mental health issue in As Good As It Gets. Mm-hmm. And then, and A Few Good Men, probably there are some unspoken...
Narcissistic.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right.
Or how about when he played the Joker?
Oh my gosh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Awesome.
All right, a little tribute to Jack.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, this seems like a good place to stop.
I agree.
So, want to say thanks again. We're really excited to have Brock and Leanne joining us on the team.
Very fun.
Yes. Next week, we're going to be talking about the documentary Amy, about Amy Winehouse.
Yep. It, I think a couple of years ago, won the Oscar for Best Documentary. It's available on Prime. It's incredible. I really, really love this documentary.
All right. Looking forward to it. Again, look for us through social media. We have a Facebook page, Mental Illness in Pop Culture. We also have a web page where you can download or listen to all of our podcasts right from there on Podomatic. We are available through iTunes or any other app that plays podcasts that you listen to. Search for Mental Illness in Pop Culture. Look for the picture of Jack Nicholson with Mental Illness in Pop Culture. We're also on Twitter, and you can reach us by email at mentalillnessinpopculture@gmail.com.
All right. So thank you, everyone, for listening.
All right.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
So I don't have like a fan page now. So.